Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
It's the Premier League preview show for week 11 of the 18-19 season. I'm Tom Rennie, and this week we'll talk about the biggest test of Arsenal's unbeaten run as Liverpool come to town, Tottenham play their third game in 6 days away to Wolves, and whether Bournemouth can push Manchester United further below them in what could be a great top six battle this season. Let's say hello to our panel. With us is TalkSport's football editor David Walker. Also with us two debutants on the Premier League preview show, the former Watford, Huddersfield and Leicester striker Ewan Roberts, and Jason Yule, once of Charlton, Wimbledon, Blackpool in the Premier League. Great to have you both with me and Dave this week. We start the show with Leicester City, who are preparing to play their first game since the tragic events of last Saturday when a helicopter belonging to club owner Vishaya Srivatanaprabha crashed to the ground after takeoff, killing all five people on board. Their match in the Carabao Cup in midweek against Southampton was postponed, but after consultation between the league and the club, it has been confirmed that this match is happening on Saturday. Players have been paying their respects all week, as well as fans who have been gathering outside the King Power to pay tribute to a man who it seems was beloved by so many, having been in charge during the 5,000-1 title-winning side, and done much to win hearts and minds in the city as well as the club. There's going to be a minute's silence before this match at the Cardiff City Stadium, and I was also reading earlier today that Leicester fans are planning to sing the club anthem When You're Smiling and to lift their scarves above their heads in the 60th minute. Ewan, let's come to you first on this. Obviously, a very, very tough week for Leicester's fans and players and everyone connected with the club, and it must be very tough for these guys to prepare for a match on Saturday.
I don't think how much preparation they would have done for the Cardiff game, Tom. It's been a horrendous week for Leicester, not just the club, but as a city as well. As a former player, if I was in this situation, I think I would want to play, in all honesty, because for that hour and a half when you're out there, you can sort of put things to the back of your mind for a while. I wouldn't say forget about things, but concentrate on what you do best and playing football. So I can understand that the Leicester players have agreed to play the game. They would have thought long and hard. There would have been long discussions about what the right thing to do was. I think Cardiff were quite happy to do whatever, play the game, get it postponed. And I can understand on the other side where there's not too many midweek games in the Premier League. I think their first midweek fixture is in December. But I do think it's the right thing, and if it was me, I would want to play.
There is a match this Saturday at the Cardiff City Stadium between Cardiff and Leicester City, a 3 o'clock kick-off. But it feels a little bit odd to us this week on the Premier League preview show to talk about team news and how we see the game going with what everyone at Leicester has had to deal with this week. The players want to play. The clubs want to play this game. Cardiff City had offered to postpone, and Leicester City want to play this game. And it's going to be all about paying tribute to those that sadly passed away. And obviously everyone here at the preview show wishes everyone at Leicester all the best for this weekend and what's to come in the coming weeks and months. When we come back in a few moments' time, we're going to get on with our regular scheduled programme. We'll talk about all the fixtures that are taking place this weekend, and we'll talk about Liverpool's visit to Arsenal. That's next.
The play goes on through Salah, looking for his second of the game. Mane looking for his second of the game as well. And it's another wonderful finish from Sadio Mane. Cardiff a man down on the field temporarily, and boy, did the Reds make them pay. It's another thrilling, incisive counter-attack from Liverpool.
In goes a corner. Flicks off a one-head. Then another. It's in. It's 2-1. It's 2-1. It has been given. And the man who I said had had very little impact on the game, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, puts it in.
Right, next up on the preview show, Arsenal up against Liverpool, Saturday, 5:30 UK time. We've got a 7:45 game Saturday as well. A long day for radio producers Saturday. Arsenal winless in their last six Premier League meetings with Liverpool, their longest such run since 94 to 2000. But they have been fantastic this season, have the Gunners. Seven wins from their opening 10, 22 points, just four behind the Reds. Liverpool unbeaten in their last 11 Premier League games, conceding just four in that run. And Jason Yule, that's where I wanted to start with Liverpool, because we talk a lot about Salah and Mane and Firmino and Shaqiri last week and what they can do going forward. But defensively, absolutely phenomenal at the start of this season. Just four goals conceded. And one of them was that scrappy one that Cardiff nicked, which shouldn't have counted. I think Ewan agrees. But, I mean, talk about them defensively and the improvements they've made, because it has been fantastic.
I think it's... the prayers have been answered by for the Liverpool fans, in terms of they knew they needed a pairing, or they needed a centre-back in terms of who's going to move them forward, because everyone knows what they were like going up the pitch. And it was always that case of, OK, if we're going to score four, we're probably going to concede three. But bringing Van Dijk in, which was probably 6 months overdue from when they actually tried to get him originally, and you look at the money they pay now, you're probably thinking, yeah, that's absolute, that's an absolute steal that we've got. And he's actually forming a great partnership now with Joe Gomez. And people will forget that he's someone that missed 18 months of football. Mm. Now he's come back slowly integrated into the team in terms of playing as a right back, a centre half. And now it's saying the partnership that they've formed with Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson on the left side and right side. It's the package you want as a back four. Very comfortable of getting up the pitch in terms of attacking play, getting back and defending. And as a unit, it's they all know the roles now. And I think that's what helps. It's going back to the Arsenal, George Graham era, is that we're working together, we're defending, we're attacking together. And I think they're taking the pride now in terms of, look, we know we're going to score goals, but let's not concede goals. And I think that's the plus from it. They're looking like a team now that do not want to concede goals.
But they're going to have a test this weekend, aren't they? Arsenal's attack has been very impressive this season. It's probably going to be one of the best attacks they've faced so far. They've had Huddersfield and Cardiff in the last few weeks, and not great going forward, it has to be said. So away from home to Arsenal. I know Arsenal didn't get that extra win that they wanted last week against Palace, but it's a massive test in different ways for both teams, I think, isn't it?
I just look at that Arsenal back four, and I don't think they will cope with the movement and the pace of those Liverpool fours. I think it promises to be a magnificent game. I think we'll see plenty of goals. You know, will Xhaka, how will he cope playing at that left back position?
Do you think you'll be left back this weekend?
What, who else
I think that Monreal's going to be fit for it. I think it's...
I think I'd rather Xhaka.
But I just think in terms of it gives you... Yeah. I think you'd probably look at it in terms of, look, if I can get Monreal full training week and get at least 60, 70 minutes out of him, I think that'll probably give them a little bit more confidence of knowing that Salah's going to be up against the Xhaka. I think in terms of what Unai Emery's thinking of is, I'm going to need a natural left back if I'm coming up against the Mo Salah. He has to be thinking that, because there is no one else. Can he go and switch to a back three and play with wing backs? I think that's going to spoil the momentum of how they've been playing and also what he's been starting as a 4-3-3. But I can't see Xhaka playing there at left back.
And we all know how Emery wants Arsenal to play from the back out from the goalkeeper. And we all know how Klopp wants Liverpool to press high. It's going to be an interesting battle.
The Xhaka thing I find so interesting, because I think Emery wants his left foot in the team. He wants him taking the corners, he wants him taking the free kicks, but he doesn't want him in midfield. They look stronger when Torreira and Guendouzi are together. So you've got to find a way to play him, because no one else at Arsenal can cross a ball.
And that's the thing, it's when you play with that three in midfield, and he can have probably Xhaka as a pivot and have Guendouzi and Torreira as the two advanced ones, but then there's someone else who's missing out. And I think at the moment he is probably accommodating Xhaka, and he's been able to get him in the team because Monreal's fit. Now, if Monreal does come back and play, does he take out a Guendouzi? Because I think he's going to be someone you're going to need against a Liverpool who can get around the pitch quickly.
Really well.
I think he's been a great snip, like great buy from what they've from a young lad who's just stepped in. I know first two games of the season were difficult games, but he didn't look out of place. And I think that he's grown the more that he's played. I know he got taken out for a little period, I think for a bit of adjustment, but I think him and Torreira complement each other, and I think they'll be vital against the Liverpool midfield and the pace that they have in their team.
Looking at Liverpool's pace, how much did it hurt Cardiff last week, and should it have hurt them more? Because it was a little bit laboured again, despite the result in the end looking quite comfortable. It wasn't a comfortable win.
I think they played within themselves. They got that early goal, and they probably thought it was job done. They knew Cardiff didn't really have the tools to hurt them. They got that second goal, and I think it was looking forward to the next game. And then Cardiff, obviously, they nicked one back with about 14 minutes to go, and you get that sort of nervousness around Anfield, and that's when they probably stepped up a gear and got two late goals, where the Cardiff... They thought they had to try and get that equaliser. They threw men forward, and we all know that when you do that against Liverpool, when you're sending men forward trying to nick a goal, trying to get level in the game, they can hurt you on the counter attack. That's when they're at the best.
With Arsenal's back line, we mentioned some of the players that are going to be out for this game. So Monreal might come back. Hector Bellerin picked up an injury Wednesday. There's also Elneny, who would be defensive midfielder, is going to be out. We mentioned Monreal already. Kolasinac is a doubt for this game. Mavropanos is going to be out, I think, to after the international break. Laurent Koscielny, you know, how long's a piece of string with this sort of injury? Just looking ahead a little bit, if they remain within 4 points, 3 points of Liverpool going into January, would you expect them to spend again and buy some defenders? I mean, Mustafi last week for that penalty against Crystal Palace. I mean, how many times do we have to talk about Mustafi not being good enough to play for Arsenal? If they had Virgil van Dijk, I'm thinking about even people like, I watched Issa Diop this week at 21. You know, that he's the kind of guy that will make the Arsenal back line better. There are players in the Premier League that will make them better. Harry Maguire, another one we mentioned earlier on in the programme, would make Arsenal better than what they've already got. Would you imagine it if they were close enough?
I think it doesn't matter if they're close enough or not. I think he's probably looking at it as an area that I need to strengthen in, because... You said you mentioned four of those centre halves, and it's similar to what we were talking about off air about Manchester United. It is a little bit of a let's throw the names up in the air and see who plucks out the two names first or drops to the floor. But I think it is a worry. I think at the moment, I just said about teams scoring more and not wanting to concede as many. But with an Arsenal, you can actually see that, because they're always vulnerable when they are defending, and it's at the moment you've got Leno who stepped in and been doing well. He's pulling off some good saves, but I just think the back four is just not good enough.
I think he will go out and spend regardless, because he doesn't treat it as his own money as Arsene Wenger did. You know, for some reason Arsene Wenger, there was a reluctancy there to go out and spend. Unai Emery, I think he'll go out and spend.
The example is Jurgen Klopp. When he came into Liverpool, it was in a similar sort of situation as to what Emery has inherited at Arsenal, in terms of there was a very unbalanced squad. There were key areas of the team which were obviously not good enough, and you can't change it all in one transfer window. And it's taken him four or five windows to eventually get all of those pieces right. And now this season, it's all there. The defence, the goalkeeper, the midfield, the attackers. There aren't really any weak points, obvious weak points in that Liverpool squad anymore. And I think Emery and Arsenal fans have got to look at it in the same way. This season, if they finish in the top four, top six, whatever, that's great. But it's next season, it's the season after, where they'll be trying to get right back up to the top table.
With that Liverpool midfield, Fabinho has suddenly started getting some games, having not been around for the first few months of the season. Was it the Champions League game played in midweek where he was fantastic? Yeah. Lots of great tackles around the pitch. And, of course, Naby Keita's out. Jordan Henderson, he's always going to be injured. You know, he's always going to get maybe 20, 25 games a season. That's about it. Who plays in midfield? Is it Fabinho, Lallana and Milner? Is that strong enough? Midfield three? I mean... Oh, it's one of those things, isn't it? On paper, you're like, oh, no, rubbish. And then you watch it and you think, wow, that three are great.
I think at the moment who's been top man for them is Gigi Wijnaldum. I think he's just been growing and growing game by game for Liverpool, where he went so long without scoring a goal, and all of a sudden he gets his first away goal, I think it was. And I think now the Liverpool fans are actually looking and thinking, he's actually a big player for us now. I think everyone knew the type of big player that Milner is, in a different type of way, in the versatility, but you're looking at Wijnaldum now, he's just grown into a Liverpool and Klopp type man. So I think he's now, I think, earned his right to be a starter without a doubt.
And he's had to change his role to a degree, because at Newcastle and for Holland, he's an attacking midfielder, really. You know, he can score you a goal. So he's had to sort of change the way he plays. I just look at the options they've got in midfield, and they're all very similar. Very similar type players, full of energy, big, strong. Have they got that something different to unlock a door for the likes of Mane, Salah, Firmino? I think they could do with some more creativity in that midfield.
Shaqiri is my final question for this game, because he has been very, very good the last couple of weeks. The goal he scored against Cardiff just showed great composure at a vital moment in a game. Is he pushing for a place when the front three are fully fit? Sadio Mane's got some injuries at the minute, some issues at the minute. But if they're in the strongest three, or we talk about the strongest three, is he in it now with the way he's played?
No.
You don't think? Instead of the way he's setting goals up. No. I mean, he's fantastic at Brighton. He's, well, instead of Mane or Firmino, I suppose. And Salah's not been amazing. I mean, why not?
No, I mean, I see it as... I don't think he would have been a Jurgen Klopp buy. But when you're thinking of an international
at 12 million pounds, it's
a no-brainer, because if you're thinking that this guy's not going to fit into my squad, you're going to go and pay double for someone who may take a bit of time.
Who hasn't played
in the Premier League. But I think with someone like, for 12, 30 mil, you go and get. But him coming into the club, he knows he's not going to be playing ahead of Mo Salah. So what he's got to be doing is thinking, right, I'm at a club where we're going to new levels, and I'm going to be a part of that. I want to keep working hard. If any one of those front three slip up, he can step in. So you can see now, it took a little bit of time to adjust. I think there was the highlighted thing after the PSG game, I think it might have been, or the one game where Klopp's come and started probably giving him a bit.
Oh, post-game. Post-game on the PSG,
But might have got blown out of context, but I think it's probably what he probably needed in terms of, right, this is what I expect from you, this is what I want you to do. And I think if one of those front three do slip up, I think he's in a position now where he's used to the Liverpool way, and he'll earn the opportunity to go and get his games.
I think if Klopp wants to rest one of two of the forward three players in maybe the lesser games in the Premier League, then he's a great replacement to have.
Well, this is not a lesser game in the Premier League. Are we going to get a big game delivering this weekend, Dave? That's the question. I say it every week, and we've not had one, have we?
You said earlier on, Ewan, that you think there's going to be goals in this. We've said this, what, last two or three weeks when there's been big...
Tottenham Man City was terrible. Yeah. No entertainment value there. What's the other one?
Liverpool Man City.
Liverpool Man City, 0-0.
Liverpool have scored 7 goals in their last 2 visits to the Emirates.
I was reading, this game has got an average in the Premier League, the last 5 Premier League games... of 5.4 goals per game. Surely this is it, right?
I think it's just because it's earlier in the season. I think no one doesn't really want to open up just yet.
Don't you normally get the madness at the start of the season?
Not quite.
So start of the season, no one knows each other. End of the season, there's too much on it.
Too many competing in and around those positions.
It's not imperative for either side to go for it yet. So we'll see.
It might be imperative for Bournemouth or Man United this weekend in what we are billing from now onwards as the battle for 6th. That's the game we're talking about next.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Young, his ball is half steer clear by the acrobatic Zuma. Pogba picks it up. It's Martial! It's a wonderful strike. 2-0 to Manchester United. Brilliant shape on the shot as he sent it spiralling into the bottom right-hand corner. Nothing that Pickford or any keeper in the world could have done about that.
Bournemouth against Man United, the first game of the weekend, 12:30 UK time on Saturday. The Fighting Cherries unbeaten in six Premier League home games, with their last defeat at the Vitality coming in April against Manchester United. Bournemouth under Eddie Howe, how many times have we had this discussion? Ewan, let's come to you first on this. Is this the best Bournemouth we have seen during their time in the Premier League? And why has it gone to this new height this season already after 10 games? 20 points. Phenomenal.
Might as well say they're safe. It's been a magnificent start. They struggled at the beginning of last season, sort of got themselves together and got themselves away from that relegation battle. I think he added ever so well in the summer. I think the young boy, David Brooks, who they signed from Sheffield Wednesday, he's got better and better every time I've seen him. He's got his first couple of Premier League goals. And they've got good forward options. And at home, at the Vitality, they're a tough, tough team to beat.
Do you think people are surprised by how on the front foot Bournemouth are?
That's the way
in
they
every
play.
Game. I mean, it's 3-4-3, but it might as well be like Cook stays back and everyone else is gone. That's all of them.
That is the way they play. And it's refreshing to see, you know, Eddie Howe has got a certain style of play that he wants his team to go out and show. And that's what you get, whether they're playing at home, whether they're playing away. It's how he is, and the players have done him proud.
You've got to be cautious to win in the Premier League, haven't you? You haven't got the best squad. Five at the back, Allardyce it through.
Their record might suggest otherwise, Tom.
But, I mean, I go back to what I mentioned earlier about when you get or needing that bit of quality in their side, and I think they've got more of that now. I think because you know that you've got King who's going to score your goals, Callum Wilson's getting your goals. Ryan Fraser's now stepped up. You've got David Brooks, like you just mentioned, who's come into it. You know, that's four players that are your match winners or people that can unlock doors with a bit of quality. Defensively, they actually look stronger as well. I mean, Aki's now stepped up into the player which we all thought that he would have been. I mean, he's not disappointed that he's doing it at Bournemouth, probably a little bit, but I think what it does is it gets him another move in time.
Puts him in the shop window.
It puts him in the shop window. So they've always been that way inclined in terms of high press, full of energy, like I said earlier, but lacking that bit of quality. But now they've got a few more bits of energy and quality in the team, which are actually getting them results, which are paying off now for the performance that they're putting in.
With Eddie Howe, I mean, I don't want to broaden this out too much, but it is worth asking, as Jason sort of raised the point there, how much is that doggy in the window? And when is someone going to take that Bournemouth manager with the waggly tail home for their own? When is someone going to come in and give Eddie Howe £150 million to spend in the transfer window? What sort of club? Is it ever going to happen for him? Because I feel like he's been tomorrow's man to the point we're in tomorrow and he's still at the same club.
I think he's quite happy to be there.
I think he is.
He's too happy.
He's not someone I think would be desperate to leave.
He's never going to get the sack, he has left
in the past and it didn't work out for him for a number of reasons that he's been quite open about. But at some point, a bigger job will come up. I've actually seen I think it was a journalist I saw today on Twitter speculating that if Pochettino was to leave Spurs in the near future, Spurs could do a lot worse than going for Eddie Howe. He might fit their model, fit their players in terms of the way the football he plays. He improves young players. He's had a reasonable amount of money to spend, relatively speaking, at Bournemouth. It's been a bit hit and miss, and some of the signings he's brought in for the bigger money haven't worked out. Some have. So that would be interesting, but I mean, if you go to Spurs, you know, maybe that isn't a problem. But, you know, it's the big question. Him and Sean Dyche really are the two sort of most high-profile English managers that have never really properly been linked with a bigger job. And you have to say they'd certainly deserve to be at some point by what they've both done with their clubs.
And that leads us quite nicely to Jose Mourinho, who's had a lot of money to spend at his current club. And yet these players don't seem to be performing as they could. Good win, though, against Everton last week. I wanted to raise this, actually. The penalty last week, which went to Everton, I thought Chris Smalling was absolutely appalling there. Like, awful defending. Richarlison might be good, but I mean...
He knew it as well, though, didn't he? As soon as he knew it,
absolutely. But I'm watching the coverage of the game, And everyone's talking about Paul Pogba doing a silly pass forward, silly lob forward. That is not the reason that Everton got a penalty.
No, but well, it is because he loses
the
ball.
It's a contributory factor, Graham Souness. But the thing is, it was a bad pass. They lost the ball. Fine, they're losing games because defensively they're absolute garbage. Chris Smalling at this point shouldn't be doing this first year in the Premier League defending.
One clean sheet in 10 games.
This is Manchester United.
And this is they were the second best defensive team last season. But that's why he wanted a couple of centre-halves in the summer. And that's why he's played players out of position.
So we can let him off then, because the players ain't good enough?
No, not at all. But maybe he's trying.
Well, he must be able to a little bit, because Lindelof and Smalling, even if you wanted Lindelof, he's not developed, he's not come on. Is it the coach's fault?
We can definitely talk about that. Last few games, he's actually looked really good, I think, Lindelof.
He's still a shaky mid-table defender. We're lucky we're pre-recording this, mate. But the defence needs to improve massively. Massively. And they're going to have 8 players running at them. And
but it doesn't help when you've got your midfielder trying to lift the ball over the
you're siding with Souness over here, are you?
Stop the sauce.
But I mean, I said it earlier, is just that when you look at Manchester United now, you don't know what they're about. They haven't got an identity about what they do, how they do it, what do they play like. All you know is it's Manchester United because of the colour kit they're wearing and the crest on their shirt. That is it. You don't know if they're going to play out from the back, if they're going to go long, and you just don't know. And it's really now in terms of, and I remember saying it to someone the other day, teams are actually not respecting Manchester United anymore. Teams are going to Old Trafford.
Not afraid anymore.
Not afraid. Everyone knows, theatre of dreams, if we manage to keep it 0-0 for 10 minutes or 20 minutes, it's that's great. But now people are going there thinking, all we need to do is just get at their defenders. That's it. And you know that something can happen. So all of that respect element at Old Trafford now is gone. And it's just in a very strange way in terms of the height of where the Premier League is going. All of a sudden you're seeing Manchester United decreasing in terms of that value of being a top team and competing.
Got to move on. Chelsea against Crystal Palace, 4:00 on Sunday. Chelsea boss Maurizio Sarri unbeaten his first 10 Premier League games as a manager at Chelsea. Of course, 7 wins and 3 draws. Only one boss, just Premier League this is, so I don't go back longer than that. Just one boss has gone for a longer unbeaten run at the start of their tenure at a club in the Premier League. Quick quiz for the lads. Who is it?
Mourinho at Chelsea.
It's not Mourinho. He did 10 before. We're on to a new record. What is it?
Say it again.
So one manager, Premier League history, has gone more than 10 games without defeat when they took over.
Wenger.
It's not Wenger. I'm going to do it. Do you want to guess?
Ancelotti,
you've gone with some of the game's greats, and you're right to do so. The answer...
Stuart Gray.
...was Frank Clark, 1994, Forest. With Nottingham Forest.
Okay.
Last time it happened this good. And they did it last week, Ewan, without Eden Hazard. They don't need him. They've got Ross Barkley.
They do need him. Britain's, he's on my green team.
Britain's Hazard, was he?
Yeah.
So smart. But, I mean, Hazard will probably be back this weekend. He looks like he's going to make a recovery from this back problem. Did he get in the team? Over Ross Barkley? You're joking.
If he's fit, he's in the team. I would love to watch him every week. I think he's a magnificent player. Balance, strength, 2 great feet, scores goals, creates goals. If he's fit, he plays simple as that.
I just want to see him go on again now, though. That's the thing. It's not so much going again at Chelsea, which I think he will do, but go and do it again somewhere else. I mean, talking about Real Madrid all the time as being the next port of call.
Well, there's got to be a reason Antonio Conte is not getting that job, isn't there? There's got to be.
Well, right away, because he doesn't want to bring Hazard with him?
No point giving Conte the job and then trying to get Eden Hazard in January of the summer, is there?
Nothing's going to happen in January. I can't see him going there in January. That's just going to mess up Sarri's whole rest of season plans, isn't it? But I just still think there's going to be more to come from him. And I think, like you said, is coming back from the World Cup doesn't look one bit tired.
I think
he's one of those ones. He's still going on that adrenaline and the excitement and of planning the World Cup. Total opposite to Hugo Lloris, who's actually won the World Cup and he's gone the other way. But you're just seeing that he looks like he's enjoying it now. I think, again, when you talk about restraints, I think a little bit under Conte last year where things weren't going quite well, he was probably being reined in. Now all of a sudden Sarri's like, look, you're my match winner, you go and play, I've got people behind us that can clear up for you.
And what you like about him as a character, he probably thought he was on his way in the summer as well when Madrid was sniffing about. Didn't get the move that I think he wanted. He's just knuckled down and he's playing his football as normal, not sulking, not throwing his toys out of the pram, just getting better and better.
In a very impressive team as well, just 2 points off the top, unbeaten. Three teams unbeaten at the top. It's incredible, isn't it? City, Liverpool and Chelsea.
Just on that, I was reading some stuff on Twitter today. So it has been an amazing start to the season, numbers-wise. We were talking about Bournemouth earlier. Bournemouth and Watford have got the most points of any team to be in sixth and seventh position after 10 games. Basically, the top seven are just way above where you would normally expect to be at this point in the season, which points to, you know, the bottom teams being even worse. There is a growing gap between. I mean, and it, were it not for Manchester United's well documented issues this season, you know, it really would be. You've seen that top six. They really are so much better and more well resourced than everyone else. And I think only going to get worse over the next few years.
And one of the everyone else teams, Crystal Palace, are the visitors to Chelsea this weekend. I've got to ask you about Wilfried Zaha. Now, last season, Manuel Lanzini was playing for West Ham against Stoke, and the defender left his leg out. Manuel Lanzini jumped over it. West Ham got a penalty, scored the first goal in the game, went on to win the game. Lanzini got a 3-match ban. He cheated and got a ban. That's the way it goes. Last week, Wilfried Zaha saw a leg, jumped over it, got a penalty. Nothing. Nothing. Wilfried Zaha is a cheat. That's the facts of it. And yet, why is there no punishment? Because of what he said the other week about
of him diving
getting attacked.
Or not. It weren't a pen anyway, because Xhaka's clearly got the ball. So I think it was more the referee has got it wrong, not to the fact of, all right, yes, Zaha's dive jumped over the leg.
But you can go back in time and punish, though, now, can't you? So he should be banned for this game.
The referee's made the decision of, oh, that's a pen. But even if the referee looks back at it again and thinks, well, hold on, I've actually made a mistake, because Xhaka's actually won the ball. Because Xhaka does kick the ball first, and obviously, yes, Zaha jumps over his leg, as he does. But I just think it's one of those ones, why not go for it? Why not? If you've stuck a leg, if the leg's been there and there's a contact, it is. If
well, he stays, not meant to, because they brought in a ban for diving,
but the thing,
retrospectively.
If he stays on his... This is the contradictory part. If he stays on his feet because he can actually go and win the ball, people will be like, oh, he should have fell down to get
he's
the pen.
He's being too honest.
But
I would have said that.
But the other
not
side
on this
is,
show.
Now, it's if you're getting contact in the box, go down. You're getting told that. If there's contact, go down.
Even if it's minimal, they're telling you go down.
The people say that, and that's the thing.
And that's fine. But Watford, man, you got me with me. He should have got a 3-match ban, right, this week. He should have got a knock on the door. You're banned. You're a cheat. Surely. Because that's the same thing as we've seen. That is the Lanzini thing. For those that haven't seen it, YouTube it. It's the same thing.
I think Lanzini hurdled the leg. That was a different... I remember it was a kneel across.
They're
and
identical,
I think
Jess.
Nah, they were.
I think you'll find they're identical.
Bring it up. Bring it up on the laptop. Come on.
I think the thing with Zaha, look...
No Wi-Fi, mate. And if only.
Plenty of Watford fans have given Zaha a stick over the years, so I'm not going to go in too hard on him. But I think a lot of the time, he's his own worst enemy. Because actually, a lot of the time, he does get fouled. There is contact, but it's just the way he goes down. He does make a meal of it, and it makes people like you, Tom, think that they're much worse than they actually are. And I think there was the penalty, the one that got missed at Everton a few weeks ago. That was a penalty, but
he's still got a stick for it as well.
I saw it immediately. I was like, oh, here we go again. He's dived again, but then you see the replay. There was a foul, but he makes it look like a dive, and then it just polarises opinion, and it's a really tricky one.
But why is there a difference between someone who always gets fouled like him, someone like Hazard always gets fouled, and then someone like Didier Drogba who always got fouled? But it seems like at the moment it's, let's just throw everything on Zaha because he dives. But he's someone that's always getting tackled, and he's always getting
Hazard
free kicks.
And I can't recall too many times where he's jumped. I mean, do a better dive then at least.
But you've seen Hazard try, and obviously little minimal touches, he goes down. But there's never the complaint of, oh, that's not a free kick, he's dived.
But he does it again a minute later.
It's the constance of, not saying protect these players, but there's always that contact, or this better player in the team is always getting free kicks and always
teams
getting fouled.
Teams are high in here, right? I understand, lads. It's all right. You've all got them in your fantasy teams. I understand. Right, we've got to move on. When we come back, it's Wolverhampton Wanderers up against always playing Tottenham.
dispossessed by Dele Alli. Alli driving forward for Tottenham Hotspur. Lamela! Oh, it's a bad miss, and Tottenham had a glorious opportunity to square it.
Right, Wolverhampton Wanderers up against Tottenham Hotspur. Spurs' third game in 6 days. Unbelievable. I thought they were very poor for a lot of the game against Manchester City on Monday at Wembley. I was at the game and the pitch was bad. It was bad. Both managers spoke about the pitch afterwards. It was when you were watching players pass to each other 10 yards, just square, simple passes, the Stones into Laporte thing, and the ball was just bouncing all the way along. And all the kind of older, and I'm sure, I think I'm the youngest man here, which is weird, but all the older journalists were all saying, well, in the 70s, it was like this. Yeah, in the 70s, you know, they didn't have...
Proper football, yeah, it's great, isn't it?
What's wrong with that?
In the 70s, no standards, was there,
right? Getting spoiled, that's
what
it is.
They were there in their flare trousers and their platform shoes, you know. I mean, the pitch was awful. Before we get into the game, I just want to ask you this. I've been saying this for weeks now. At some point, Tottenham are going to get punished for this, right? So they already broke a rule this week. They had the NFL badge in the centre circle. That's not meant to be there, but they couldn't scrub it off in time. It was the NFL that worked overnight to try and get that badge off. They still haven't got a home ground. We're recording the show Wednesday. They might have beaten West Ham in the cup. They then got to name a home ground. They're not going to be able to play at this ground all season, right? It ain't going to happen.
Why is that?
Because have you been over there? It looks a little bit like a granddad's shed.
They might have to, though.
So they're going to have to... Well, they've got to do test events. It's got to be safe for people. No, so they've got to find a home ground.
They might have to play the remainder of the season at Wembley.
It's the fans that I feel sorry for, really, the most. And I was speaking to a few fans that work here and...
You feel sorry for Tottenham fans?
I do in this instance because...
Well, first of all, never win anything, do they? So that's one.
The club have managed it really badly. Building projects overrun all the time.
Yeah,
it's not surprising.
Yeah.
And if everyone's expectations have been managed, it would have been fine. But the club have always been the last people, really, to tell everyone what's going on. We've always heard what's going to happen before, and it's leaked in the papers and stuff before the next delay's been announced. The fans are expecting a new stadium. There's the season ticket issue. They've paid for one thing, they're getting another. There's refunds, there's having to buy more expensive tickets. Then you've got a game like that that's after an NFL game because of the whole situation. It's all been a shambles, but ultimately it will be fine. It doesn't really affect anyone else in the league, does it? It's the Tottenham fans who lose out the most, and you know, you just got to get on with it. But on the subject of bad pitches, I was going to ask Jason, did you play on the beach at Stamford Bridge?
Yeah, played
that time.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean that's got to be the worst pitch in Premier League history.
It was quite surreal because when at Stamford Bridge, you know, you go down the steps and you come up the steps, and it's just as you're coming up the last few steps and it comes in your eye line, and it was just brown. But you're thinking, was it sort of like a sun reflection coming down? And it's just coming, you're thinking, there's no grass on here. It was lit. There was no grass.
That was what, like 2004, something like that?
About that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
like,
literally, it was just sand and just rolled flat. That was it. And it was just one of those, we're just thinking, wow, okay, let's crack on with this.
Did you
then.
Miss hit any passes that day?
Scored a pen, put it that way.
You're dying for the pen. Don't bring it out. Wolverhampton Wanderers, one of your former teams, Ewan. Haven't scored a goal in two games. What's gone wrong?
They've not strengthened that position. They've brought... Is it Jimenez?
Yeah. Raul Jimenez, yeah. Makes him strike.
And he hasn't really hit the ground running. They got off to such a good start. I think people got slightly carried away thinking... Top 7, top 8. All of a sudden, it's a bit of a reality check for them. They've lost their last two. But I think this is going to be a really tough game for Spurs. You know, Molineux, when it's rocking, there's no better place to play apart from Vicarage Road. Dave, I hasten to add. But yeah, they'll be looking to get back to winning ways, especially when you think Spurs play Monday, play again tonight.
Mm.
So three games in less than a week, it's going to be a tough ask.
And they've got a big Champions League game a few days after this game against Wolves as well. PSV. At Wembley next week, which is a must win. So it is a very difficult ask for Tottenham. It's going to be very interesting to see what team they put out.
Got to move on. Man City against Southampton, 3 o'clock on Sunday, weirdly. At Wembley on Monday, I thought Man City were very poor for a lot of the game. And maybe it was the pitch, but the passing wasn't quite crisp. The way they were trying to get forward, they wasn't great. I was thinking more defensively because I was going to lead to Benjamin Mendy. In the post-match, I thought it was really interesting. Everyone's asking their questions. One of the journalists said, Benjamin Mendy wasn't great tonight. Is he all right? And Guardiola said, yeah, he's in the shower, he's fine. I mean, defensively, Spurs should have scored 2 or 3. The Lamela miss is obvious, but
pitch.
But do you think it was the pitch, or do you think there was a little bit of fatigue and anything else?
I don't think the pitch helped him, but you would expect him to score. You'd expect him to hit the target.
Mm.
But if he could use the quality of the surface as an excuse, because it was shocking. It just bobbles as it gets to him, doesn't get his body over it.
But so you thought Man City were good first half, then?
I thought they were. Yeah? I thought the way they passed, I thought the way Sterling was down that left-hand side, I thought they looked good first half.
Jace?
No pun intended, but I think it could have been an American football score to start. I think that's where they were looking. That's how you thought it could have ended up in terms of the way they did perform first half. And I think in terms of the second half, I think they allowed Tottenham to grow into it a little bit too much. I think it was them not getting that second goal. You always thought that Tottenham were going to get a chance, because it's very, very unlikely where you see City being at only a goal ahead for a long period of time against us, any team really, but especially a team of Tottenham's quality, where you think it's just going to take that one opportunity to change things.
They should have been out of sight.
They should have been, yeah.
And it makes me laugh. People always question City defensively. Best record defensively last season. What they conceded this year.
Yeah, but also Tottenham were succeeding. Tottenham were conceding that they were playing some great big diagonal balls into Harry Kane. And every time he won it, because Stones and Laporte were either letting him have it or couldn't get off him, Fernandinho wasn't deep enough. And it was Spurs' fault for not doing it enough. Last 2 minutes, the two centre-halves kept passing to each other. Every time I watch someone do the high ball against Man City, they struggle. And then you've got to have good defenders as well. Often it's teams like Cardiff that try and play the high ball, and they've got no one at the back, and they can't deal with people running at them. But if you knock it long against Man City, you're going to get some joy. If you were playing up front, and you just got a couple of goals in that game.
Man City are unbeaten every single time when Aymeric Laporte has played in the Premier League.
I find that incredible. Yeah. I just find that incredible. I don't doubt
19 matches, 1-17, drawn 2 since he's been in the team. He's the only player for Man City to play all 90 minutes of every game this season.
That's why they paid such big money for
him. Really briefly, they're playing Southampton this weekend. And Southampton, they are fifth from bottom as it stands, above the four we thought would be in and around it. And they look right in that mix, don't they? Just one win this season, just 6 goals scored. Mark Hughes, I think, has just won 3 games since coming in. Last season,
he just kept.
Can that last? Mark Hughes there
before they sack him.
Yeah. Would it be harsh because the players aren't good enough? Because the record over his period there is terrible.
Poor squad, a very poor squad.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Agreed.
Poor squad.
No goals.
Agreed.
Well, they've consistently lost their best players over the last 3, 4, 5 years, if you want to say. They haven't replaced them either by buying good players from outside or by developing youngsters in the way that they have done in previous seasons. And if that happens, inevitably, this is what happens.
It's going to catch up with you sooner or later.
Most of the quality of their youngsters are all out on loan. And it's more based on in terms of the two, including Mark Hughes, the previous manager, hasn't really included those type of players, where the ones in the past have integrated one or two and have gone on to get more games.
Yeah.
So if you think of Matt Target, who went out on loan to
Fulham
last year, you think someone who's had a very good season in the Championship, been part of a promotion team, getting back into your group, let's see what happens. But nothing's changing in the academy. I think it's just in terms of with Mark Hughes included and the previous manager, just not getting anything out from the players that they've got. And is it the coaches and the manager not making them better players, or the players are just not good enough to compete in the Premier League?
A similar sort of debate with Newcastle right now. I take on Watford this weekend, 3 o'clock on Saturday. The home form. Lost all 5 of their home Premier League games, winless in their last 10 Premier League games so far this season, never failed to win in their first 11 in a top flight campaign. It's a game against Watford at home that Newcastle have quite simply got to win, but when you watch Watford, certainly against Huddersfield last week, fair enough, Huddersfield defensively were very, very poor, but going forward, the talents of people like Deulofeu and Pereira, and you look at the way Newcastle are going to have to try and stop all these attacking threats coming at them, I just can't see a scenario where Newcastle win this game. What is the scenario?
I think it's, in a strange way, I think it's not so much a do or die for Newcastle, but I think it's that type of do or die. But I don't think Benitez would get a sack type do or die. No. I think it's more.
I was talking about getting a new contract, wasn't there? In the press last week.
But I think it's more in terms of them actually needing a win.
I hope he doesn't get paid per win.
Mike actually knows that. I mean, he's is bad. It's bad enough already. If he sacked Rafa Benitez, I mean, he would never be able to set foot in the city.
But what if, what if they're what if they're in the bottom three with less than 10 points with 20 games gone?
He still keeps him.
Does he?
Yeah.
I think he does, yeah.
But should he?
Who get any better?
I mean, okay, fair enough. You can't get anyone better, but that's but a, that, that's the kind of record that gets everyone sacked, right?
Yeah, if I said that's what I mean. It's a do or die
everybody.
Thing, but he won't. I can't see him getting sacked. If it was another manager and they lost this game at the weekend, they're out the door. If not, they should have been out the door already. 10 games and no wins. Mm. But I think what you said is, with what Ashley's already got on his shoulders, they lose this game at the weekend and sack a Benitez. Wow, that's. Yeah. That's going to be total
Saka Benitez at the headline.
Saka Benitez.
You're working for the Sun these days, aren't you? Good.
Just look at the players they bought in over the summer. They bought Keegan Fernandes from Swansea, who went down. They bought Rondon from West Brom, who went down. They bought him when he weren't even fit. They sent Dwight Gayle the other week. I think they've scored 6 goals. Defensively, they're not bad. They've only conceded 1 less than Arsenal. So defensively, they're not bad. They just can't put the ball in the back of the net.
In the bottom three, as things stand, and Watford, one of the better teams away from home in the Premier League as well. 2 wins already on the road, 7 points in total. And you must have enjoyed it last week, Dave. Tremendous performance against Huddersfield.
I was there, and it was one of those strange games where actually Watford didn't start very well. Huddersfield had a lot of possession the first 5-10 minutes, and they forced Foster into a few saves. And I'm sitting in the stands as a fan thinking, well, hang on, lads, what's going on? Here we go. We're already going to lose to Huddersfield again, aren't we? No matter how bad they are. But then two bits of brilliant individual skill, first from Pereira, second from De La Feo, ably assisted, must be said, by the Huddersfield defenders, not wanting to put a tackle in at any point. But still, they produced 2 goals out of nowhere, and then it was home and dry. And then you saw Watford trying to score brilliant goals and came really close on a few occasions to scoring some amazing goals, and it was a canter at the end. And I think that this game at the weekend, the first goal is really, really, really important. I mean, as it always is in most football matches. But I think if Watford score early and they start doing the things they were doing to Huddersfield last week, I think it could be, you know, embarrassing for Newcastle. It could be a toxic situation up there because it's going so badly. But if Newcastle score first, the fans get up. You know, they've got a chance. But it is, as Jason said, it's a massive match. They've got this home game against Watford, and then the week after they play Bournemouth at home as well. So that they've got to get some points from those two games.
The thing is, Dave, Watford now, you might as well say they're safe with the start that they've had.
Absolutely.
You know, and they'll go up there.
But what they've got to do...
There's no pressure whatsoever.
You're right. What they've got to do is... This isn't the first time that they've been in a situation where they've had a lot of points early in the season.
Manager will be sacked in January.
The last 3 seasons, they've got to avoid the drop-off. But I'm confident from what I've seen from the coach that won't happen this season. I don't think you'll have quite... I think if the current form, we'd end up on something like 76 points or something ridiculous. So obviously it's going to level out at some point, but I don't think it'll be off a cliff face like it has been the last few seasons.
Champions League Hornets on the horizon. Looking forward to it. Tell you who's not going to be in the Champions League. They're going to be in the Championship. That's Huddersfield Town. They take on Fulham Monday Night Football. You and I are doing this one. I give the games out. I don't know why I've done this to myself. I really don't. They could become only the second team in English Football League history to fail to score in their first 6 home games of a season. Mansfield in 1971, the last time it happened. I just don't see what the process is for them to score a goal. I don't know whether we talked about it from Man United earlier. Is it get wide and cross to Big Departure? Is it play through midfield? Because there's no runners for Pritchard and Moy to look onto. So what do they do? And I mean, to be fair, if you can't score a goal against Fulham right now, you can't score a goal. No. So is this a good fixture for Huddersfield?
Not for me, no.
It's not.
I think. Well,
are there no good fixtures?
At the minute, they're not. they look doomed, and I hate saying it because I spent 3.5 great years up there. Managing didn't really strengthen in the summer. There was a lack of goals last season. I think the two that you mentioned, De Patra and Mounier.
Yeah.
I think they only scored 13 between them.
They
haven't hit the back of the net this season. And when you defend like you do against Watford, I mean, I think it was the second goal where De La Feo went past Lerva and then Jonathan Hogg. And they just, it was embarrassing.
You were happy with Hogg there, weren't you? It was the other day you didn't like.
It was embarrassing. And then
Van der Parra.
No, Pereira. Yeah, his goal. He's got 6 Huddersfield players
on him. Not one tackle.
And he just walked in. He just sort of sauntered in a straight line as well.
It
really
looks as if they've thrown the towel in and here's another one, David Wagner. How long do they give him?
Because he's done a tremendous job, you know, got them out of nowhere into the Premier League, produced a miracle last season in keeping them up. But how long do they keep the faith with him for?
What players they've given him, I suppose, is the other question.
It's a good point, but I think he gets a lot more time than his opposite number does in this weekend. I think Jukanović is the man that if something happens and they lose this game to Huddersfield Town, then I think everyone's going to be looking at him and thinking, you know,
because he's had loads of money, 100 million as well. He's spent a lot of money, and there's been no identity of this is the Fulham that we saw last year, regardless of going up a level. But you're not seeing any traits of a Fulham from last season. And I was going to jump on that with Huddersfield. From when they first came up, there was something about them. Everyone looked and said, oh, we like what we see here. This is, and then it started phasing out a little bit, saw a glimpse of it. But Huddersfield, there's nothing to what we've seen in the past. And I think it's the same now with Fulham. There's no sort of fast attacking play or overloads in the box or anything like that. It's just very much like, oof, this isn't, they said in terms of their defending, this isn't the Fulham that we sort of saw in the Championship. It's a totally different side. And I think, like you said, it could be either or, but I don't think it would happen to Huddersfield if the result didn't go their way.
I think if you look at Huddersfield last season, they got off to a great start, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
What, 7 points from their first
Palace first game. I think they
beat Newcastle 1-0and drew with...
They beat United.
Man U was like October time, maybe. Yeah.
That sort of stood them in good stead. They were all fresh, they were all new, they were had that momentum from winning promotion. Well, they're not new anymore. And I think they're bang in trouble. And I was surprised at Jukanović's comments this week when he said, well, I'm not going to change my style of play. I believe in our system.
And a swinging door policy.
I'm not going to change. Sometimes you have to bite the bullet.
Don't worry, they're going 4-4-2 going on Monday.
Well, listen, that back to basics thing, it kind of leads us to Brighton in a lot of ways. Because if you're Huddersfield Town or even Fulham right now, I know he said he won't change it, Jace, but if you're looking at the way Brighton have done the last 3 weeks, 1-0 wins, and it does feel like in all those games they were, let's get a corner and try and score from that. And also, if we don't concede a goal here, we are going to get something from it. And they go to Everton this weekend, and I'm sure they'll play exactly the same way, and there's no reason why it wouldn't work.
And it's like what the Fulham guys have said is, I'm not going to change my ways. You can still keep doing what you're doing, but probably have a little bit more stability, or just come back a notch on how many players you overcommit. So there's ways of how you can tweak things, but with Brighton, that's their model, that's how they do things, that's their structure. And it's, if we can get our goals from open play, is a bonus. If we can get them from set plays, is a double bonus. But ultimately, they're looking to try and get their goals from open play, because of, this is what we believe in, how we're going to play.
And that is Chris Hughton.
Yeah, exactly. He's always been that. Yeah.
He was hammered for it a little bit because he's too negative, he's too defensive. That's how he is. He's not going to change. And at home, they're on fire at home. I think this will be a step too far for them to go up to Everton and come away with anything.
I always found it astonishing that Norwich thought they were too good for Chris Hughton.
I know.
I always found that amazing.
I know.
We had Norwich fans in the office at the time, and they give him so much stick, and I still can't believe
it. In their defence, he was on a shocking run. And, if you're going to be defensive, that's fair enough, but you can't concede six at the Emirates. You can't concede five.
Do you remember that goal by Jeremy Goss? Turn it down, Norwich fans. Right, one more game we haven't mentioned. West Ham against Burnley. Of course, this game last year was the pitch invasion and the board out and all that sort of stuff. West Ham, you know what? Defensively, been very, very good in the last few weeks. Conceded that late goal for Wilfred Ndidi. And again, it might again lead back to Chris Hughton and what the other teams have got to do. If they lose a game, they don't lose it by much. They were getting hammered last season. That was an intentional pun. And the season before. But these sorts of, you know, they're not. And I think this might be quite a close game, a tight game. I suppose it depends on what West Ham players who go forward are actually fit. This might be a good one for your 0-0 this weekend.
Nah.
You don't think?
Burnley have conceded 9 in their last 2, Tom.
Yeah, West Ham will have Grady Diangana.
Will
born in this millennium. He's Generation Z.
Is that Arnautovic going to be back?
Apparently he's ill at the moment. We will see. Without Arnautovic, I think West Ham have got a lot of issues.
Fancy,
and of course,
barely, if he's not fit.
Well, Mark Noble suspended. Midfield will be Rice, Robert Snodgrass, and
why do you sort of
insert another player?
Not snigger, but laugh when you say Snodgrass.
Robert Snodgrass.
He gives you everything, Tom.
If you'd have told me after spending £100 million that Robert Snodgrass would still be in midfield, I think I'd go for a nervous breakdown and several drinks because that makes no sense. But that's where they are. That's where they are right now. Briefly on Burnley, it's the kind of game for them that old Burnley might have lost. Old Burnley might have won. Where are they now, Burnley?
I think they are where they should be. I think they overachieved last year. You know, they were grinding results out 1-0, solid defensively, stuck to their beliefs, just nicking games. They might have had the Europa League at the beginning of the season. I don't think that. I think as an ex-player, I would rather a competitive game in pre-season than these meaningless friendlies. So I think that would only stand them in good stead. I wouldn't say they've been found out, but I think they are where people expected them to be last season.
8 points, 3 outside the relegation zone, as are West Ham right now. And one final one on this game. No keepers in the Premier League have made more saves this season than Lucas Fabianski of West Ham and Joe Hart of Burnley. They've both made 44 saves each. Joe Hart didn't make one save during his time at West Ham. What's going on? What is this about?
You just said that West Ham are solid defensively. That can't be the case if he's been overworked.
I think most of them were in the Liverpool game, to be fair. It's about 20 shots that he saved in that one. Lads, we're out of time. Thank you very much for your company. If you are listening to this programme on a radio network, you can download an extended podcast. Just search for a Premier League preview show. Acast, iTunes, Spotify, whatever. Enjoy it on your commute. We'll see you next week.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.